All right, thank you very much. And so thanks to organizers and apologies for appallingly untechnological talk. So this will be about mirror symmetry with brains and fluxes, and it's a work based on work done over the last year plus with lots of people who are mentioned here. So here is the rough plan. I'll talk a little bit about some technology, how one can handle situations when we have fluxes turned on, and then I will make some mirror symmetry proposal, not particularly motivated by anything, which accounts for Neve-Schwarz fluxes, and then I'll sort of try to run some tests. So the basic question is, what is mirror symmetry when we have the fluxes on? And all right, so mirror symmetry has done lots of good things for us, but we also know that once the fluxes are on, life somehow is not the same. And for some practical and some psychological reasons, we are still looking for the ways how to find the old familiar things in this new setup. So what's the basic idea? Well, okay, for example, one could look at N equal 2 superconformal field theories where there is a exchange symmetry between chiral, chiral, and chiral, anti-chiral sectors with exchanges the marginal operators with dimensions respectively given by H11 and H21, which correspond to Kähler and complex deformations of the manifold. At the effective theory, this manifests itself in sort of a vague statement that when one exchanges two manifolds in this fashion, there are two equivalent or two different theories are compactified on these two different manifolds, yielding the same effective theory after compactification. So in some ways, I mean, we are all used to sort of these numbers, but one can go back and remember that this originally came from some cohomology spaces respectively defined on tangent and cotangent bundles. And in a way, I mean, okay, this was Calabi-Yau specific, this transition. It used, for example, existence of a covariantly constant holomorphic tree form. So in some ways, I will be taking one step back and sort of going to T and T star. Alright. So the big advantage of all this, of course, is that we are replacing some difficult questions in one of our theories by some easier questions in another, and this is a nice calculational tool. As I said, most of the practical part of it will be lost once the fluxes are on, so at the moment, we are at the very basic level of trying to generalize the statement that a mirror of one Calabi-Yau is another Calabi-Yau. So what is a mirror of a manifold or sort of compactification background, let's call it this way. All right, so this story gets even nicer in many ways when we introduce brains into the picture. In particular, the usual lore is that we have A model and B model, which correspond respectively to special Lagrangian submanifolds, which have flat connections on them. And on the other side, we have holomorphic submanifolds with bundles, which in practice happen to obey certain Hermitian-Young-Mills equations, which are very non-linearly deformed. So I will come back to this aspect at the very, very end of the talk, but introduction of the brains allowed also for some very internal, intrinsic formulation of mirror symmetry, which is due to Strominger, Yao, and Zaslow, which came, physically speaking, from consideration of moduli spaces of B-brains on Calabi-Yau manifolds. So, roughly speaking, the statement is as follows, that for every Calabi-Yau manifold with a mirror, or every Calabi-Yau manifold which has a mirror, is a T3 vibration. And mirror symmetry itself is just T-duality along those three fibers. And moreover, the dual manifold can be seen as moduli space of these special Lagrangian submanifolds. All right, so before I try to define my proposal, how can one possibly generalize all this, I'll have to talk a little bit about few basics, and Mariana did some of this yesterday too, on how to turn fluxes on. Alright, so the best way probably, or the best motivation, is to go back to supersymmetry and think about supersymmetric backgrounds, n equal 1 in particular. So without fluxes, everything was nice and easy. We had a Ricci flatness, which was sort of going very well along with a condition that there exists a covariantly constant spinner on our internal six manifold, which altogether was summarized in the condition of having SU3 holonomy. All right, so we have fluxes on. We account for back reaction. What it boils down to is that we have a right-hand side on our equation, both for the curvature and for the spinners. So is there a way of dealing with it? Okay, so let's assume that we have some kind of topological remnant of the back reaction. So the fluxes are on, the metric back reacts, but somehow there is some... something somehow it does remember about sort of its good old days. Alright, so it is summarized in the following statement that there exists some invariant objects, invariant in a sense of embedding of SU3 in SO6, and typically these objects are spinners or equivalently tensors. I mean, as physicists, we can always take bilinears and speak in whatever language we like. In our particular case of SU3 structure, there will be a pair. And here I have just written all this for the Calabi-Yau case, okay? So what happens when we have this reduction of structure? Well, this is a topological condition, and it just boils down to existence of a subbundle of a frame bundle with subgroup, which is called G. For all our purposes, mostly G will be equal to SU3 in this case. Alright, so as I said, it's topological, which means the structure group on the tangent bundle itself reduces to G, and everything which was normally should be transforming in the representations of GLN, like all the tensors, start transforming in representations of G. And equivalently to all this, I mean, simply what we have to do is just look for those invariant objects, and their existence itself is equivalent to the statement of reduction of the structure. So this is sort of an algebraic part, and algebraically speaking, for SU3 structure, everything is exactly the same as for SU3 holonomy. Where the things break down is in the differential conditions. So we may have a spinner, but the spinner will not be covariantly constant anymore. Alright, before I start talking about differential conditions, maybe I just tell you that there are basic examples that everyone, of reduced structure that everyone knows. Orientability. That already reduces the structure from GLN down to SON. Existence of spinners. That already puts a further restrictions. And here again, I just wrote down the algebraic conditions for SU3 structure. So J is a 2-form and omega is a 3-form. And this will stay with us throughout this talk, and the condition between them, the orthogonality and the normalization of the volume, stays exactly the same as for Calabi-Yau. Oh, all right. I'll try to move. Sorry. I'll just show this, and in the future I'll move it up. All right. Okay, and there's another summary. Okay, we can say that sort of, okay, probably Mariana convinced most of you yesterday that existence of SU3 structure is sort of goes hand in hand with n equal 2 in the effective action. We all know very well that when we have SU3 holonomy, actually it's not just the effective action, but there exists n equal 2 vacua. And essentially for most of what we are doing, okay, I'll try to put an answer or give some answer to this question mark, but essentially we are looking for the situations where we will have n equal to 1 vacuum. All right, now to the differential conditions. Okay, I'll try to make it short. So essentially, one way of talking about this G structure is to say that there exists a connection, not necessarily a Riemannian one, with respect to which our invariant objects are covariantly constant. All right. However, we would like to talk in terms of Riemannian connections, And thus we take a difference between two connections, and this difference apparently, I mean, this is the nice thing about the formalism, is that sort of it characterizes the failure of these forms to be closed, and everything falls into representations again of SU3. So the way it works in practice, what we have to do, we just have to quotient the frame bundle by a joint of its principal sub-bundle and take the product. So, okay. For SU3 inside SO6, what we have is we have 3 plus 3 times 3 plus 3 plus 1, which is the quotient of 15 by 8. All right. So this is 6 times 7. So there is something which has 42 components in total. So these 42 components are the failure of the connection to be the connection of special holonomy. So in other words, if we consider this triple of the tangent bundle, frame bundle, and some principal sub-bundle, there are problems, there are obstructions against extending the connection from P to the connection on F, okay? And F, and these intrinsic torsions, or the failure, in other words, of J and omega to be closed, is exactly what quantifies this obstruction. So when all of these things called W vanish, then we have a SU3 holonomy. If they are not, then we don't. Okay. So one nice thing is, so from here you can easily read off that different W's are forms of different differential degree. So this is, for example, a 3 form, and this is a 1 form, and this is a 0 form. And as you can see, so in red I have written representations of SU3, and every different form of different differential degree has a different representation attached to it. So that's very convenient. Okay, this formula can also be rather intuitive in the sense that looking at it, we can immediately make some conclusions about sort of what torsions correspond to what manifolds. For example, if one looks at the bottom line, so if we are working with a generic complex manifold, which has, however, a well-defined holomorphic tree form, there is absolutely no reason that this thing has to be closed. However, if the complex structure is integrable, this would be a 3-0 form, and hitting it with D, we can generate only 3-1 and 1-3 forms, but never 2-2. So this is a 2-2 form, obviously, and so is this by definition of W2. So for manifold to be complex, we would want these two gentlemen to be 0. So that means in the torsions, we will be missing 1 and 8. If we want our manifold to be Kähler, obviously we would want all this line to vanish, and obviously has to be complex to begin with, so the only possibility is to have W5 non-zero, all right? So just looking at this, we can draw some conclusions. All right, let's turn an H-field on. In a few moments, probably it would have been the good place to speak about this now, but in a few moments I will talk about the possibility how to have U3 structure and why we sort of might want to discuss this case, why it might be useful. All right. But before, let's try to turn on a B field. Okay. So we are, again, very much used to complexifying the Kähler form. So, okay, I will not be calling this J a Kähler form anymore. I should be calling it a fundamental form. But the logic stays the same, that there is some complexification going on. It's also obvious that since the field strength of B, which is a tree form, it should transform in the same representations as DJ, which was another tree form. So I can just run exactly the same decomposition as I did for DJ. So I will have a zero form, which transforms as a singlet, a one form, which transforms in three, and a three form, which transforms in six. All right? So this will be the things which my B field will have. And now I can formulate the basic sort of problem of how to, I mean, what's the problem with mirror symmetry? Okay, so one of the very, very basic definitions would be it's something which exchanges symplectic and complex properties of the manifolds. So now, neither our symplectic form nor our complex form is closed. We have to somehow manage to exchange their integrability properties together with them. And here we see that integrability properties are given by perfectly, absolutely different representations. So it's as simple as that, how to mix or how to exchange 6 with 8. as a first step to this answer, I will assume, or I will just consider, a situation where my manifold is elliptically fibered. Differently from SYZ, I have absolutely no no justification for this. It's just an assumption, all right? Later, I will see that the answer which I get, I will manage to put in some covariant form. And so I will make a proposal which will not rely on existence of T3 fibers any longer, okay? I'm not assuming, normally if this T3 fiber was smooth and the manifold really admitted the three isometries, this would have led to reduction of the structure. I'm not generally assuming reduction of the structure because we know that the fibers can degenerate. However, the basic T-duality, of course, we do in the large T-smooth regions. Okay. Now, once we do this, then the answer is sort of semi-obvious. I mean, one way of mixing different representations is just decomposing them further. Once we decompose, then we might meet pieces which are sort of the same, and then they will start talking to each other. So it's also obvious that if the idea is to do T-duality, we cannot find invariance of mirror symmetry on the whole six manifold. The invariance can live only on the base. It's the base which doesn't transform under T-duality, the fiber does. All right? So let's go to the base. On the base, we essentially have three representations. A singlet, a vector representation, which is also the same as two-index anti-symmetric matrix, and a symmetric two-index object. So which are 1, 3, and 5. This is all we can have on three-dimensional base. And we can just take, so I remind you that this W2 was a two-form, which was in representation 8, and W3 was a three-form in representation 6, and we just restrict them to the base of T3 fibration. We see how our representations decompose further, so we pick a symmetric and anti-symmetric part here, which correspond to 5 and 3 respectively, and we pick a trace and the symmetric part here, which correspond to 1 and 5. Now we can start envisioning that, okay, since if you remember, the basic problem was exchanging 6 and 8, and now we see we can maybe avoid it and rather exchange this 5 with this 5. In order to really do it, of course, we know that for T-duality, we need a B-field, because metric alone, I mean, even if we started without it, it will get generated. So if we are looking for invariance of T-duality, we need to turn the B on. And for technical and not only technical reasons, I will take B to be at most fiber base type. So I will never look at B which has two legs along the fiber. Okay? And so here is the transformation. So I do see how different objects in terms of their original sort of six-dimensional representations get exchanged under T-duality. So again, the symmetric part of failure of complex structure to be integrable gets exchanged with the symmetric part of the failure of symplectic form to be integrable as well. And the same goes for threes, and the same goes for the singlets. You see. So on this side, I had originally 1, 8, and 3, and here I had 6, 3, and 3. Right? Okay. But we also know that another way of sort of mixing representations is to add them up. That's actually even nicer. Moreover, I already showed you that sort of in mirror symmetry, naturally we have things which are T-valued and things which are T-star valued, and okay, why not put them together? Just a little word of caution. I mean, in this case, strictly speaking, I should be talking about T and T-star of T3 and not the 6 manifold, but I just extend it to the entire manifold, okay? So in order to add representations more conveniently, what I will do, I will pass to a spinorial basis. As I was arguing in the beginning, existence of these invariant objects, J and omega, is equivalent to existence of an invariant spinor, all right? So I can just as well speak in terms of spinors. Moreover, I told you that the lack of covariant constancy is characterized by 42 components. All right, 42, that makes 6x6 matrix and one vector. And, okay, after some using the SU3 and spinorial bases, I bring everything to the following form. So here, this guy will have 3 plus 3, and this is 3 plus 3 bar squared, which is the 42 packed in this way. Okay, so a little bit of work, and we can write these Qs in terms of Ws, which I showed before. And here we have already our first little discovery that the failure of Taylor form to be non-integrable was encoded in sixes and threes, and this corresponds to the metric, so I passed to holomorphic, anti-holomorphic indices. So this corresponds to purely holomorphic objects, and the failure of being complex structure to be integrable ends up being holomorphic, anti-holomorphic. Alright, so when I show this form, probably this would be the place to talk about U3 structure. I mean, we heard this morning about F-theory, and apparently this is one of the largest and most important classes of compactifications of type 2B theory in particular, and my basic assumption of SU3 structure obviously is not compatible for F-theory. I mean, reasons are the following. So translating all these J's, omegas, W's, etc. in a more, well, depending for whom, but more convenient language, boils down to the following. So you want a vanishing third Stifel-Whitney class, that is to say that the manifold admits almost integrable complex structure, so it's almost complex, and you want a vanishing first Chern class, that is to say that the canonical bundle is trivial and I can define a well-defined omega. So obviously the second condition does not hold for F-theory. I mean, by construction, we want to start from a base which does not have C1 equal to 0. C1 would be 0 for the totally fibered space. Moreover, we know for many examples in F-theory compactifications, the base manifold is not even spinner to begin with. So much less it would admit an invariant spinner. So how to deal with it? Well, writing it in this form sort of makes it suggestive that this looks like a covariant derivative on the spinner. I mean, covariant in Qs and QMs. Moreover, the U1 piece, which is sort of makes the difference between U3 structure and SU3 structure, goes into this vectorial object. So in some way, we can define things in a spin-C fashion, and even if we don't have a trivial canonical bundle, some power of it will be trivial. And so, just like Bogdan was mentioning today in the examples he was working with, he had a double cover, which was a Calabi-Yau. All right? So in many places, even though I will be speaking explicitly about the SU3 structure, I can generalize and I can really talk about U3 structure. Okay. Sorry? A priori, yes. Okay, but now back to my Qs. So, okay, I managed to, instead of writing Vj and d omega not being zero, encode it in terms of Qs. In order to really talk about p-duality, I need to pass to something which also encodes the H. If I play dumb and I just pretend I've never seen supergravity, I just demand what would be an operator diagonal under t-duality, which means that things transform at most up to a sign, I will just construct this operator, which corresponds to just the standard way as it appears in the supergravity. And so from now on, I will be replacing my little Qs by big Qs, and the algorithm for constructing these Qs is the following. So every time where we have a W and an H in the same representation, we complexify it. However, we take the real part from the matrix. So notice that, for example, if we complexify W4 here, we are still multiplying it by a complex object and taking real part of the whole thing will account both for omega and H. And the same goes here, for example. Not here, but here. All right? So even though we are complexifying some things inside, the total matrices, the big Qs, just like little Qs, are real, which means the entire Neve-Schwarz sector, both B-field and metric, non-trivial, they are still encoded by the same 42 components. So their failure to be flat or integrable is still encoded in 42 components. Now, if I take my transformations for Ws and write them in Q language, I also see that there is a way of sort of covariantizing it, meaning dropping the assumption of t-duality, just writing it in six-dimensional covariant coordinates, which encodes everything. Here is the answer. So what I apparently have, which encodes the previous results, is that under t-duality, the Q, big Q, with purely holomorphic indices, and Q with one holomorphic, one anti-holomorphic index, get exchanged. This corresponds to 6 plus 3, which is this guy, and 8 plus 1 being exchanged. So if I couldn't exchange 6s and 8s, well, 9s, 2 9s I can exchange. It also accounts for everything which I had done on the base, because on the base it was 1, 5, and 3, and here again I have 1, 5, and 3. Okay? So here now is our basic proposal, which is quote-unquote a useful one in the sense that if someone gives you some background, you can go and calculate the omegas, h's, etc., and try to look for its mirror. Okay? So it gives you some quantitative prediction. So now I will be trying to test and motivate it. Before doing so, I'll just say one place where a similar sort of decomposition or similar playing 6 plus 3 bar against 8 plus 1 has appeared. And this was an older work of Salomon on twister bundles or on lines of pure spinners on 6 manifolds. And on those, he had shown that there exist always two almost complex structures, one of which is never integrable, and the second one may be integrable. These properties are not very important. What's important is that if we would like to have the sections of these bundles to be holomorphic with respect to one or the other complex structure, this would require either the torsion in 6 plus 3 bar to vanish or the torsion in 8 plus 1 to vanish. So these are two different holomorphicities which are sort of given by the same components. I don't know. We have a feeling that this must be related at some level, but the exact correspondence of this statement to our mirror symmetry proposal so far escapes us. Another point is that both Salomon's work or another rewriting of what I have done, which would be just taking covariant derivative of J and H and looking at things in these indices, either three holomorphic or two anti-holomorphic, these can be formulated, again, without reliance on SU3 structure. J, which is the fundamental form, or Nabla J, is encoded. I mean, this is perfectly aware of Nienhuis tensor. This doesn't need omega in order to talk about complex properties of the manifold. So for this formula, I do not need existence of SU3 structure. U3 will be perfectly fine. All right? So again, this is one of the places where we can generalize some of what we are saying to the case of U3 structure, which in particular would apply to F theory, because there the base is always scalar, which means it's actually U3 holonomy. All right. So let me now show you the first check of the proposal, which comes from turning on also Ramon-Ramon fluxes and just looking at supersymmetric backgrounds. I guess whichever way you try to formulate mirror symmetry, one on which we all can agree is that it should map one supersymmetric background into another one. All right, so let's see how it works. Just a couple of technical words. So here are our basic supersymmetry transformations, and the formulation of supergravity to work with is the so-called democratic one, which has few basic advantages. First of all, it handles type 2a and type 2b in one go, so the differences are in some projection operators. Second, it very well separates Ramon-Ramon and Neve-Schwarz sectors, and the Neve-Schwarz sector always has this operator H written in a form that I already showed you. And the third, that we can modify the Dilatino transformation in such a way not to have the Ramon-Ramon fields altogether. I mean, we do have a covariant operator on the spinner, but sort of we'll find it more pleasant to deal with. The rest is straightforward, so we decompose the spinner into four- and six-dimensional part, and 2a and 2b are related in the flip of chirality in the second spinner, and we take an ansatz which preserves four-dimensional Poincaré. That is to say that all the fluxes are either purely internal, or if they have legs along the four dimensions, then that's a four form, the volume form. Okay? Once we plug it in, this sort of removes the self-duality in this internal part. Yeah, I forgot to mention that this two form is self-dual. Alright? And now we have in type 2a all even forms and in type 2b all odd forms sitting in this transformation. Okay? And so remember my Qs again, which were decoding the entire Neve-Schwarz sector. And now equivalently, I can decode entire Ramon-Ramon sector in matrices, which are R's, S's, and, well, A, T, whatever. So the things which are underlined in blue are more or less definitions. That is to say, they fix, for example, warp factor or dilaton in terms of Ramon-Ramon fields. Okay? And the things which are in red are just pieces of superpotential, for example, flux superpotential into A or to B, or such a piece, which is there both for 2A and 2B. Okay, so essentially we are left with one not underlined equation, which we have to solve. Okay, so it has a vectorial component and it has a matrix component. But before we even solve this, there is something very striking and very easy to see. So as I said n times by now, the total non-integrability of my Neve-Schwarz sector was encoded in 42 components. Now let's count the components of all Ramon-Ramon sectors. So either I have a 0 form, 2 form, 4 form, and 6 form, 1, 15, 15, 1, or I have a 1 form and 5 form and a 3 form, which is 6, 20, and 6. You sum it up, in both cases it's 32. Which is to say, never mind how generic our Ramon-Ramon configuration is, it will always have less components than Neve-Schwarz. That is to say, there is some sector of the Neve-Schwarz theory which is going to stay as it is. It is not going to get a back reaction. And this statement, okay, you can package and repackage it in different ways, but this is the basic statement. Moreover, once you go and check, what happens is that, all right, the differences are sort of 10 in total, but everything works representation per representation. So if we check type 2a versus type 2b, we will see that in this matrix Rij, which I showed, which is the counterpart of Qij, in type 2a, it will miss both holomorphic parts, and in 2b, it will miss holomorphic and anti-holomorphic parts. So my mirror symmetry conjecture, so here is the sort of mirror transformation of Ramon-Ramon sector, which exchanges odd forms and even forms, but it also exchanges, just as I wanted, sort of holomorphic-holomorphic and holomorphic-anti-holomorphic R's. So R's have exactly the same transformation properties as I had for Q's. And in order, of course, to have a vacuum, I should cancel R against Q. So indeed, I see that supersymmetric backgrounds get mapped into supersymmetric backgrounds. As a bonus, I also get a statement about existence of some particular sector of the Neve-Schwarz part, and this leads to sort of some classification of n equal 1 backgrounds. And here I flash the classification just for you to see. So 2B somehow is much richer than 2A, and it has three basic situations, one of which corresponds to purely Neve-Schwarz, the second corresponds to self-dual flux and conformal Calabi-Yau metric, and the third corresponds to sort of S-dual version of the first type, a representative of which is a Maldacena-Nunez solution. We also see that there's this 2B in principle would admit some kind of interpolation between those 3 points, which is given by the following equations. This is for the representation 6, and this is for the representation 3. In some ways, staring at this gives you sort of a little bit of a feeling why working in this language might be a little more useful than, let's say, solving equations of motion, even if the net result is the same. For example, if one starts from the central point, which is B, which is the self-dual fluxes, and try to solve the interpolation perturbatively, one could see that this last equation, which corresponds to the self-duality, does not receive first-order corrections. Also, the only person, the only object, which receives a first-order correction here is this component W3. However, in the Ricci tensor, it will appear quadratically. That is to say, we can perfectly well solve this interpolation at first order. However, we will continue seeing Ricci flat metric and self-dual fluxes. However, when we go to this language, we see that the metric definitely is no longer has anything to do with Calabi-Yau because the torsion starts becoming non-zero. Okay, and at second order, you of course see everything in its full glory. But never mind that. I will go back to my mirror symmetry and sort of try to give another explanation for why what I am doing I am eligible to call mirror symmetry. Okay, so another formulation of it, or of what mirror symmetry is, would be something that exchanges symplectic and complex properties. Well, in Calabi-Yau, normally, I mean, until recently, we never thought about exchanging the Kähler form and the complex structure directly. It doesn't work this way. I mean, it's rather the deformation spaces that get exchanged. However, you can notice a very strange thing, that if instead of the Kähler form, you take the exponent of it, and you take omega, there is a very, very well-defined exchange of the two under t-duality. So here, okay, never mind the details, here, roughly, how it works. So t-duality works as a hot star on the fibers. So it acts on the forms as hot star on the fibers. All right. The way I'm defining my complex structure and the fundamental form accordingly in this setup is I'm splitting my metric into the base part and the torus part. And the complex structure is diagonal, meaning I always complexify one coordinate from the base with one coordinate from the fiber. In this language, my fundamental form will be 1-1, not in a sense of holomorphic, anti-holomorphic, but in a sense of fiber-base split. All right? Now, if I take the e to the ij, it will have a 1-form, 2-form, 4-form, and 6-form. In the language of fiber-base, it will have 0-0, 1-1, 2-2, 3-3. Let's do the hot star on the fibers, which in this case is the second in the bracket, and I see that I'm mapping it into 0, 3, 1, 2, 2, 1, 3, 0, which is a single 3 form as far as differential rank goes. You do everything with coefficients and all that, you do recover omega. Okay? So there is a very well-defined procedure with exchanges not j and omega, but e to the j and omega. So far everything is very, very classical, right? Under t-duality, nevertheless, they do get exchanged. I mean, we know that the protection properties are different, and that's why we like mirror symmetry. But the basic exchange of moduli spaces is there. And in this particular case, under t-duality, the objects themselves do get exchanged. Moreover, we can turn on the B-field, and here is this formula, which is not very pretty, but which does account for the B-field in this t-duality exchange. Again, you see the basic idea of omega getting replaced by e to the ij, and never mind this mess, I will show in a moment this formula in a nicer packaging. But before I do that, I may sort of wonder, okay, now that I see that my basic objects, in terms of which not only I can solve supersymmetry, this and that, but also formulate mirror symmetry are e to the ij and omega, I may ask if there is any kind of formalism which would put both of them on the same footing. And the idea is that, yes, indeed, on t plus t star, I can find something in, or I can ask a question in which both of these will be answered. And that has to do with so-called pure spinners. It didn't have much. All right, so here it gets repeated more or less. There exists a natural structure on T plus T star, an ODD Clifford algebra, where I can have, and Mariana mentioned all this yesterday as well, where I can have gamma matrices with indices up and indices down, and I'm not allowed to use metrics to bring them up and down. If I do that, I will collapse everything to ordinary Clifford D algebra, but otherwise it's Clifford DD. I can also represent things as wedges and contractions ordinarily, and I can see that in this basis I can find, okay, I need to split things again back to holomorphic and anti-holomorphic objects on ODD, but the bottom line is that I can find combinations of gamma, of these new gamma matrices, such that both e to the ij and omega are annihilated exactly by six of them. All right? So they are, okay, being annihilated by six, which means having the dimension exactly equal to the dimension of the space, is what I will be calling purity. So once I am on T plus T star, what I have done, I have to set up some kind of new differential geometry. Well, my basic objects are no longer vectors, and my basic bracket is no longer a Lie bracket, but I should add also formally one forms to this and define some new object. This new object will be a so-called Courant bracket, which will be the modification of ordinary Lie bracket with terms which involve Lie derivatives and also D acting on contraction. Okay? Nice thing about it is that both the basic object, the sum of the vector and the three form, the vector and the one form, and the bracket themselves admit a nice action of a closed two form. So in this formalism, what we are able to do, we are able to use B field, closed B field, exactly on the same footing as diffeomorphism. Okay, this is what we are gaining by going to T plus T star. However, of course, there are also little problems. In particular, this new object, new bracket which I defined, does not satisfy Jacobi. There exists a sub-bundle on which that Jacobi is satisfied, and this sub-bundle is exactly what one calls generalized complex structure. All right, if one looks at the action on forms of our basic objects, which live in T plus T star, we see that the basic action is a sort of, it acts as a Clifford product. Moreover, we can see that the space of forms forms a module under this action. And if we look at the space L sub phi, which is annihilated by our X one form and the vector pair, this space will be isotropic. That is to say, it will be made out of null objects. Okay? So again, this isotropic space corresponds to generalized complex structure. So what is maximally isotropic? Maximally isotropic, just by basic definition of Cartan, I guess the original one, is what one calls pure spinners, and this defines generalized Calabi-Yau structure. Okay? So from now on, I'll forget all this, and I'll just simply work with pure spinners. Alessandro will be telling more about this tomorrow. And I will just show, in the last 15 minutes, yet another place where these pure spinners show up and how they can be connected with mirror symmetry. In the very, very beginning, I mentioned that when I start wrapping D-brains, so for the moment, let's go back to Calabi-Yau, okay? So when we are wrapping D-brains on Calabi-Yau, we have to satisfy some, notably in the B case, B-brains, we have to satisfy the so-called stability condition. That is to say, there are non-trivial equations which live on the, which involve the connection of the gauge bundle on the brain, and we should just find when these equations are consistent. So when such an equation will have a solution. Well, the so-called stability condition can be written in the following form. So alpha is just a phase, and here is the pullback of the e to the ij, and here is f, and okay, the whole thing should be zero. I mean, when you look at this, maybe this does remind you, for those who remember, the definition of a special Lagrangian cycle. Because there we also had the imaginary part, e to the alpha, and the holomorphic form. Holomorphic three form, okay? So, but you see one striking thing is that, okay, this can be nicely written in terms of e to the ij. So maybe this is not a coincidence, okay? This is our pure spinner. All right, so I'll spare you the details of what one does and how one does, but both A model and B model have certain symmetries. For example, gauge transformations for A model, B model, and something more complicated which mixes the metric and the gauge field for the A model. So if there is a symmetry, we can calculate Noether currents. So a fancy name for it will be a moment map. So let's calculate that moment map, and again, I'm not even trying to show how to do it, and some of it was done by mathematicians, some by Lung for B model, and some by Thomas for A model. What the outcome of this is that a proper modification of a pure spinner, which is you take what I was calling pure spinner, my pair of e to the ij and omega, and multiply it by e to the f, that this object is a moment map. Again, I was telling you that purity does not change under the action of a closed two form. Before, I was calling it a B field, but we also are used in string theory to the gauge invariant combination of B plus F, right? So obviously, multiplying it by E to the F is not going to change the purity either. So I just have new pure spinners, and I can add E to the B here as well, and these things come out as moment maps for symmetries of respectively A model and B model. And the stability condition for both of them, now I can write in just one formula where phi is e to the ij or B, depending whether we are B or A. Okay? So here is a single stability formula. However, I mean, that would be another definition of mirror symmetry, that moment maps should get exchanged under its action. So let me turn on now this B field, and let me rewrite the formula which I was showing you before for T-duality, which involved all these hot stars on the T3 in the following form. Okay, so yes, there is e to the ij multiplied by b plus f, which does get mapped into omega multiplied by e to the b plus f. And this is a standard object which appears in the T-duality, which is the connection on the Poincaré line bundle, except that in this case it is twisted. So normally we would just write the coordinates on T3 and on the dual torus. Now we replace them by Virbinds. That means they are shifted by a connection. Okay, so it's some kind of twisted Poincaré bundle. So here is now my basic T-duality, and again, yet another consistency with sort of standard mirror symmetry expectations is that I can claim the proper exchange of two objects which should be exchanged under conventional mirror symmetry. Okay, just a few words how I'm dealing with my connection. So all the Fs which I wrote there, I treat them as six-dimensional. Never mind if the brain is a one brain or a five brain which fills the space-time, all my connections are six-dimensional. If I sort of locally gauge fix, what I can do is I can split into longitudinal and transverse parts. Okay, these I will denote by big F and little f. So alpha has nothing to do with it. What alpha denotes is the index along the torus. So I am suppressing the part of Fij which has both indices on the base, but both the scalars and the tensor and the vector fields can have components along the torus. And this is the one single component which I'm denoting as alpha, which I'm keeping. It's obvious that these two spaces are orthogonal, so there is some orthogonality between big F and small f. We do know very well the action of T-duality, which every single T-duality adds or subtracts one direction along the braid, right? That is to say it replaces a component of the vector field by a scalar. So I do find some kind of invariant of T-duality made out of big F and little f, which I can drag out of my formula, and that's how I proved or showed the formula on the previous transparency. However, I can notice the following thing. I mean, if I was on some space with lots of isometries and I could do the T-duality to the extreme, I would replace all my longitudinal components by transverse, and the other way around. So this this invariant is a much, much nicer written in terms of the gauge fields only, which include only big F, but F without hat and F with the hat. However, if you count the dimension of it, it will be always top, meaning it's a total gauge field always. So if you look closely and try to, okay. So one way of putting it would be the following, that my gauge fields correspond to sort of generalized momenta, and my transverse scalars are length densities and correspond to windings. The T-duality exchanges the two completely, but for closed string sector, I will have 10, or, well, 6 in this case, windings and 10 momenta. So I might as well just put all the momenta together or all the windings together. So this corresponds exactly to putting this big F and small f, big F and big F hat together. And this object is what I will be calling now a D-brain now, because it's just equivalent to having big F and small f. The tangent bundle to this creature is the tangent bundle to my original submanifold and the conormal bundle. If I add to this the standard condition that my H field is in relative cohomology, that is to say when pulled back to the brain, it is exact, I recover a definition of generalized complex submanifolds, which is due to Galtieri. Probably instead of sort of doing this, I will just show you a cartoon of how it all works. So here is one basic picture. These are our brains within brains. This is the wedge product. These are a billion brains. And we know very well that there is a big brain which knows about instanton numbers of all smaller brains which live inside. All right? Well, this is not very T-duality invariant. So if we do a full T-duality, we will flip this thing, or I don't know, turn it inside out, and our smallest brain will become the biggest one, or it will be the one in terms of which everything else is written, right? So here is the T-duality. However, either one of the two will be complaining about the other. So the only way of manufacturing consent is the democracy. And so in perfect world, all D brains are of the same size. And this is what sort of how we treat them in generalized complex geometry. All D brains are 10-dimensional, and no one complains. All right. All of this is very, very similar to the way we were treating the couplings of the Ramon-Ramon field to the D-brain. So what I call Y here is this complicated factor which involves the square root of a Chern character of something which lives in K-theory, all that. So I'm calling it Y, and normally we are just writing wedge products in order to couple Ramon-Ramon fields to Y. Okay, now I will be sort of freely flipping between Ramon-Ramon fields in the bulk and the pure spinners, because they are exactly the same from point of view of ODD. Both of them are just the same elements of ODD, spinners of ODD. And what I had tried to mumble and probably better show in terms of the cartoon is that my D-brains are also elements of DD, ODD, and the natural way of coupling those actually would be not to wedge multiply, but to take a Clifford product. So here it is. And what do we get if we do this thing? Again, I'm not changing my basic element. I'm changing the operation, the way how the form and the D-brain couple to each other. So I can form a top form not only by taking the things which sum up to this top form, but also taking internal contractions, right? So let me again go back to my 10-dimensional gauge field, and I can pull it back if I gauge fix sort of on the brain. I can pull it back to a connection or to a transverse scalar. The way to do it is to introduce objects which will be spanning the frame of the tangent bundle and the normal bundle. If I look how the connections will pull back, here is what I am finding. So I do find that the scalars have the covariant derivatives, the covariant action of the gauge field, as they should. On top of that, they are also covariantized with respect to the normal bundle, as the general covariance of the formalism would depend. So if I write such a coupling, I choose a brain, I don't know, 6 brain, 5 brain, pull everything back and account phenomenologically, I will be recovering everything which Rob Myers wrote. And years ago, so this will include all the Myers terms with all the covariantizations and the bonus covariantization in the normal bundle. Okay, so what does it do to our brains? Well, on the B side, the result is sort of predictable, so we recover back our Hermitian-Young-Mills equations because in both cases we were dealing with exponentials of e to the f. On top of this, there will be some scalar terms which give us sort of generalizations or higher dimensional analogs of Hitchin equations. Okay. On the A side, well, it for the brains which are three-dimensional and five-dimensional, not much changes. So omega pulls back and gives us a special Lagrangian case. There is a fancier, more complicated case of this so-called coisotropic brains, which was known for the last few years. And there was always some sort of mismatch again, lack of democracy between A side and B side, because B side always involved all the holomorphic cycles, while A side, the dimension of it was bound by the middle dimension of the manifold. And we see here that maybe, I'm not sure how interesting these objects will be, but at least that maybe non-abelian effects restore also democracy in this sense, that maybe we can write interesting gauge equations for one-dimensional objects. And maybe we will have 3, 5, and 1 as we should for the full democracy. All right, this brings me to the very end. I don't think I have much to conclude. Hopefully, I went some ways in convincing you further, in addition to Mariana's talk, that T plus T star is a place to live, and that sort of lets you do a bunch of nice things. Have decent formulation of mirror symmetry without relying on supersymmetry, n equal 1, n equal 2, or anything else. It's sort of intrinsic. It may lead to some rethinking in terms of this general, the picture of the brains in generalized complex geometry, maybe of the standard K-theory classification, or maybe processes like brain and flux annihilation. That also is to be seen. There will be some conclusions to be drawn, which Alessandro will do tomorrow, for example, add some global information to the picture of T3 vibration and all that, which I was talking about. So, like, how to do really SYZ for these situations when one exchanges the C1 and some integral which has to do with the H flux. He will also show the sort of yet another aspect of pure spinners and how nicely they encode the conditions for preserving n equal 1 supersymmetry. So my last conclusion will be just to recap and see that, okay, I could start from a mirror symmetry with on ordinary Calabi-Yaus. So in the language that I was talking, this is not too interesting. I wasn't doing any specific examples or wasn't counting instantons or corrections or anything. I was just saying one Calabi-Yau is mirror to another. I could turn on a B field and go to some generalized story. After that, I could also turn an F field and get yet even more general, sort of discuss something with the brains. But it lets me also go up to the situation when I have sort of a modification of mirror symmetry on Calabi-Yaus with bundles, and this is something which has independently, about this line, we have some information. People have been working on this. And it seems that sort of our longer route gives us more or less all that is known, and it's also consistent. This doesn't absolutely guarantee we didn't screw up anything on the way, but at least for every mistake, we made another one to cancel it. All right. So here is the basic idea, and I stop here.